This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. When you were a child, did your mother give you a vitamin to take every morning? Moms and most doctors told us that these vitamins would give us the nutrients we needed to grow up big and strong, nutrients that we weren't getting in our daily diets. It made some sense, and it made a lot of money for the vitamin companies because half of Americans are taking them. It's a $12 billion a year industry. But after a series of studies, doctors are saying those vitamins are a waste of money, and they might even be doing us some harm. We're going to be talking about taking those multivitamins on this half hour of The Source. We want to hear your vitamin stories. If you're going to change your pill popping habit because of this recent report, call in. Want to hear from you at 210-614-8980, 614-8980. And to help us talk about this, we have Dr. Edgar Miller. Dr. Miller is a professor of medicine and epidemiology at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. He's also the co-author of the editorial Blasting Multivitamins in this week's Annals of Internal Medicine. And we're also joined by Dr. Michael Lefevre. He is the University of Missouri Future of Family Medicine Professor and Vice Director of Clinical Services. Welcome to The Source.
Hello, David.
Thanks very much.
So, Dr. Miller, tell me about what this editorial is saying. Lay the groundwork. What about multivitamins?
Well, as you can see, the editorial was a summary of the three articles published in the Annals of Internal Medicine. One being the task force, U.S. Prevention Task Force conclusions based on a meta-analysis or an accumulation of trials that look at single or paired or multivitamins and effects on clinical outcomes like stroke, heart attack, death. The other being a secondary publication from the Physicians Health Study looking at the long-term effects of multivitamin supplementation on cognitive function decline. And then the third, a high-dose multivitamin trial looking at myocardial infarction or heart attack after a previous heart attack. And in a sense, all three of the studies are fairly consistent that there was no evidence for benefit. And these studies, following the long line of negative studies and some studies with suggestions of harm, led us to write this editorial and to use the very provocative title of "Enough is Enough, Stop Wasting Your Money on Vitamin and Mineral Supplements."
But so, Dr. Miller, you're telling people enough is enough, case closed, this is settled stuff. But let's talk about precisely what it is that we're talking about here. So is this multivitamins? It's like Flintstones and one a day, that type of stuff?
Well, multivitamins, as you know, from the vitamin stores or any supermarket or drugstore, there are a wide range of vitamin supplements, either individually or multivitamins, that are available. In the task force, and I'll let Dr. Lefevre talk about this more. He knows about it more. But it was focusing on primary prevention studies, meaning people who don't have disease, what's the effect of a single or paired or multivitamin supplement on these endpoints of cancer, stroke, mortality. And what they conclude is that there was really limited evidence for any benefit from the supplementation on prevention and cardiovascular diseases. So these reports are, the task force report is based on primary prevention, preventing disease in people that don't have it, whereas the other studies were looking at treatment effects of high-dose supplements. The oral high-dose multivitamin mineral study after heart attack looked at what was the effect of treating with high-dose multivitamin supplements to prevent second heart attacks or death, and they were essentially null. There was no benefit of either in the primary prevention or in the secondary prevention realm.
So, Dr. Lefevre, take it up from there. I mean, what did you find?
Well, I think Dr. Miller described it perfectly. The task force focuses on taking asymptomatic healthy people and what preventive services might keep them that way. And for this particular review, we focused on the question about whether there are any supplements, nutritional supplements, vitamins and minerals that might be useful to prevent heart disease and cancer. Specifically, the scope of the evidence review that we commissioned was limited to those issues. But those are, in fact, two of the more common things that are touted as benefits. And basically what we found was we couldn't recommend any specific single nutrient, pair of nutrients, or multivitamin on the basis of evidence that shows that they help. We also have to say that for any specific nutrient or for a multivitamin, the evidence was still inconclusive. In other words, we can't say for sure that there isn't some nutrient in some dose for some population that might be beneficial. But the bottom line is that and this is out as a draft recommendation, the task force will be looking at public comments and then making a final recommendation later. But the draft recommendation says that the evidence is insufficient, so I, as a clinician, can't recommend these supplements to my patients on the basis of good science that tells us that they're likely to benefit.
Well, let's talk about maybe some exceptions. We know that women who are pregnant will be given prenatal vitamins, and I would hate for people to, I mean, that seems like a good practice, yes or no? I mean, Dr. Lefevre?
Yeah, sure. There's, from a task force perspective, there are a couple of recommendations we have on the table that are actually positive recommendations, and then another one that's cautiously negative. So let me just describe those. First of all, folic acid specifically, at the time of conception and during pregnancy, does seem to prevent neural tube defects. So that's a very specific nutrient. There was enough suggestion to benefit from that, actually, that in the United States there's been some fortification of flour to enhance folic acid levels. A second recommendation that would be viewed as a positive recommendation would be for the use of vitamin D in older adults at increased risk of falling. Now, that's very specific, and so we're dealing with a very small proportion of.
Because that would help with the bones?
It helps. Well, actually, it's interesting that the findings are more related to prevention of falls rather than prevention of fractures. We also have a calcium and vitamin D recommendation statement in terms of prevention of fractures specifically. And unfortunately, in that one, that's a negative recommendation, and it's very common in primary care these days for people to recommend typically 500 milligrams of calcium carbonate along with 200 international units of vitamin D, typically twice a day, to prevent postmenopausal osteoporosis and fractures. And the task force felt that the evidence was certainly good enough to recommend against that specific supplementation.
Okay, so we're going to talk more about this. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're talking about this new editorial talking about don't take multivitamins. That is a waste of money. We want to hear your stories. The number is 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. Enough is enough with those multivitamins already. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. That's the message from doctors behind three new studies and an editorial that tackled an often debated question in medicine: do daily multivitamins make you healthier? And with me on the line to talk about that, the co-author of that editorial, Dr. Edgar Miller. He is with Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. And also I have Dr. Michael Lefevre. He is with the University of Missouri. He helped conduct one of those studies. Let's get a caller on the air. Our number is 614-8980, 614-8980. Christy's on the line. Christy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I have two questions that I'm very concerned about. First of all, I want to know exactly what it means, recommended daily allowances that are posted on these bottles. To my understanding, as a clinician, that these are percentages recommended to prevent a vitamin deficiency disease, not necessarily a wholesome, healthy person. But it's misleading in that these people may actually exceed thinking that they're going to get benefit, or actually it's not going to be absorbed. those kinds of things. I want to know exactly what those recommendations are based on. The second question that I have is in regards to calcium supplements. Calcium supplements that are being touted as being supplements to offset or prevent osteoporosis. When oral ingestion, to my knowledge, of calcium supplements has nothing to do with the malabsorption of calcium, which means that leading to osteoporosis, meaning that the body is actually taking calcium from the bones in order to supplement blood calcium, causing osteoporosis. And that cannot be, to my understanding, be absorbed orally.
All right, Sherry, those are pretty informed questions. Thanks for, thanks, Christy, for calling in with us. So let me ask you, Dr. Lefevre, any response to that?
Sure. I'll take the second question first and can respond to the first, but also provide Dr. Miller the opportunity to do so. That's what we were getting to just before the break, and I think that we can say what does not work. We can say that the usual calcium and vitamin D supplements that have, quite frankly, been routinely recommended for women post-menopause to take to prevent osteoporosis and fractures doesn't work. It doesn't prevent fractures. Does that mean that there is no dose of calcium or vitamin D that might help? We don't know whether there is some other combination or some other level that might help, but certainly what is most commonly recommended, we have demonstrated that it does not prevent fractures. So I think we could stop doing that at least. And I'll turn it over to Dr. Miller if he wishes to take the RDA question.
Sure. What the caller is asking about is the RDA, which is the recommended dietary allowance. These are recommendations made by the Prevention Task Force, I believe, not this one in particular, but where each micronutrient, vitamin, mineral, antioxidant, there is some range of intake that's recommended. And for instance, vitamin C recommended intake is 75 milligrams to 90 milligrams, depending on whether you're male or female. Vitamin E, for instance, 15 IUs. So typically, if you eat a very healthy diet, probably not even a fully healthy diet, you'll meet many of the RDAs through sources of fruits, vegetables, nuts, beans, low-fat dairy, things that are from basically healthy diets. And so any additional supplement that people take will put them beyond the RDA. So I think the other part of the question was how were those thresholds established for what is a recommended dietary intake? And I know in a couple of cases they look for a threshold where perhaps there's a physiological response. For instance, with vitamin D, perhaps it's the point where PTH starts to go up in the serum. So they found a spot where D intake was adequate to suppress PTH increase. And I'll have to ask Dr. Lefevre if he knows any more information about how each of the individual micronutrient RDAs were historically set. But one quick conclusion about the broad range of micronutrients is that if we eat a healthy diet, we can easily meet or exceed these just from diet alone, and we don't need supplements for these.
So, Dr. Lefevre, you wanted to address that micronutrient issue?
I think that's a fair conclusion, and there are a variety of ways that those micronutrient levels are established, and quite frankly are somewhat in flux, and not everybody agrees that what you read on the back of the pill bottle is exactly the dose that would be maximally beneficial for health. I think the important message, however, is that if you eat a good diet, you don't have to worry about that. Now, I can assure you that I have very, very few patients in my practice who think that they eat a good diet. I think we're still talking about the average American diet as opposed to I eat the perfect diet. And most people don't need to worry about the levels of vitamins that they're getting with respect to all of those things you read on the back of the pill bottle.
Well, the dietary supplement industry is criticizing your editorial and these studies, of course, because this is their bread and butter. But they're saying that you guys are living in a fairy tale world that you make the inaccurate assumption that we're all eating healthy diets and getting everything that we need from food alone. So, I mean, I don't take these dietary supplements, and am I missing out?
Yes, I could start on that comment. I think the industry in general is part of the promotion of supplementation is that there's a perception in the U.S. population that there are deficiencies. And I think people eat a good diet or even a diet that's not wouldn't meet the DASH diet recommendations are still getting adequate amounts of micronutrients and minerals. And so I think this marketing to make us feel like we're all deficient is a way to get people to purchase supplements. And so I don't generally believe that we're all deficient, and it may be unnecessary. So I think there's a lot of room for discussion about what constitutes deficiency. And, you know, certainly we don't have scurvy or we don't have rickets, you know, which is a vitamin C deficiency, or we don't have rickets, a vitamin D deficiency clinically in our population now. We're generally an overfed population, in spite of the fact that the quality of the foods might not be as good as we hope, but still we have adequate intake of these things from diet.
Let's go back to the phones now. Sherry is on the line. Sherry, welcome to The Source. Go ahead.
Thank you. I have a question about women who take tamoxifen. I know that a lot of them are prescribed the calcium and vitamin D combination, and I wonder if it's possible to extrapolate this advice for those women as well.
Which doctor do you feel like who'd be better to answer that? Dr. Miller, Dr. Lefevre, who do you – go ahead.
Dr. Lefevre, would you like to take that?
Yeah, sure. If you look at this from a task force perspective, then none of the studies that we would have included in our review would have included women who are taking tamoxifen, because they're either taking it typically because they have had breast cancer or they are trying to prevent breast cancer. Tamoxifen actually has a positive effect on bone health, and so somebody might recommend calcium and vitamin D as another adjunct to that positive effect on bone health. But I actually personally am not aware of any evidence that suggests that women who take tamoxifen are more likely to have problems with calcium or vitamin D. That certainly would not have been part of the task force review that was just done. It does potentially relate back to the question about whether calcium and vitamin D help prevent osteoporosis and fractures. And again, as one of the previous callers alluded to, my personal advice to women is get your calcium from your diet. And quite honestly, get your vitamin D from the sun. It doesn't take very much. But the supplements in the doses that we conventionally recommend across a healthy population does not seem to prevent fractures. Let me just add one thing about that healthy population and this notion that we live in a fairy tale world. The studies that have been done have not been conducted in a fairy tale land. They've been conducted across a broad swath of people in the United States. And so there may, in fact, be within those populations some people who truly are nutritionally deficient. But the studies which have failed to demonstrate benefit were conducted across average Americans eating average American diets.
Now, when you the dietary supplements, they're largely not regulated, right, Dr. Miller?
Yes, they're regulated somewhat for quality control, but they, in terms of indications for disease treatment or prevention, they don't have to adhere to FDA standards for treatment. So they can say things like for heart health, or they can say for bone health, but they can't say, for instance, for treatment of osteoporosis or for there's a subtle language difference that that you'll see on vitamin supplement.
And I know that some these products have been told that they have to back off on the promises that they were making, that it would make prevent heart disease or something like that. They can't say that.
They cannot say that. That's correct. And if they do say that they're being sold as an indication to treat heart disease, then that would violate the rules about that. So the language is very subtle in terms of how supplements are marketed.
So, Dr. Miller, I mean, actually, we're revisiting this again. If you've been reading the papers, you know that this is not new. We've known that these things have not been very productive in helping people stay healthy or avoid chronic diseases. But the backlash seems to be pretty strong now that it's being rearticulated. People feel like this is important to them, and that they're not ready to give them up. Why do you think that is, Dr. Miller?
Well, I think that, unfortunately, I think that people in general, the task force is a very careful update of the primary prevention studies. What I value as a clinician is evidence-based medicine. If somebody is taking a drug or a therapy, you want to see in the setting of a randomized trial where people don't know whether they're getting a placebo or the active intervention, and then you look at outcomes at the end. Do they develop the heart attack, or do they live longer, or do they develop cancer or not? You want to see evidence from in that setting, the randomized trial, in order to make recommendations. And I think that the Prevention Task Force guidelines, which go through the evidence carefully, end up not showing benefits. So why is it we continue to perpetuate? I think it's almost like by people are very wed to it, and they can't tear themselves away because they want to have good health, but it's not a panacea for good health.
They may feel like it's helping. They're doing something to make themselves more healthy. Anyway, I want to thank you for joining us, Dr. Miller from the Johns Hopkins, Dr. Michael Lefevre from the University of Missouri. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back.